Hello, I'm Nigel Reed, and welcome to Cricket Central. On this edition, let battle commence. The ICC Champions Trophy is about to kick off with all the big guns ready to fire. Can the Aussies defend their title? Will the Indians prove their class? Or can England prosper with home advantage? All that and more right here on Cricket Central. As usual, I am joined by two of the brightest cricket minds in Canada, former Canadian international batsman Zubin Sukari and respected cricket writer and broadcaster Faraz Sarwat. Boys, we've just gone past the IPL 2013 with some memorable performances, and I'm thinking along the lines of Chris Gayle and Shane Watson, MS Dhoni, Lasith Malinga in the final himself, the usual suspects. We're going to see them, Zub, in a very different format, representing their countries, but I think they're all going to be expected to perform once again.
Yeah, in a tournament that's almost like an Olympics, you know, you've just seen kind of club cricket, which is like an English Premier League type of thing with the IPL. This is kind of nice. It's a short and sharp, and as Faraz and I were talking kind of offline, a lean tournament with some good teams and some good players, and I think it's going to be pretty competitive.
Well, just draw the analogy here between club versus country. You've done it both. You play week in and week out for your club. Then somebody says, here's the national jersey, put that on. Does it make you a different person? Does it give you a different approach to the game when you know you're representing the country?
Totally. I mean, there's just a certain level of pride. And we see in World Cup soccer when it comes around and how far the tentacles reach when World Cup, you see all the bars are busy. You know, everyone now all of a sudden, everyone's got a flag on their car. So it's similar in cricket forms too when you play for your country. It's a massive, massive privilege. And to play in a great venue like England, which is, you know, going to have a good fall and good games, It's something I'm looking forward to.
If it stops raining, of course. You can never predict the weather in England. For us, this is the Champions Trophy. It's the seventh edition. It may well be the last ever ICC Champions Trophy. It's a 50-over format, similar, of course, to the Cricket World Cup. And I wonder whether it's a competition which actually deserves a future, or whether it should be allowed to just wither on the vine?
All official indications are that the tournament is going to be done away with, although I know you and I have both heard behind the scenes that, you know, there may still be life in it. And some of it may depend on how this tournament pans out. Like Zub, I'm confident that it's going to be a good tournament. It is lean with the top teams there and no filler. You know, every game matters and you have to do well. And I actually like this tournament quite a bit. I think it's a good 50-over tournament, particularly in an age where you no longer have too many tri-series going along. Back in the 90s, when one-day cricket was basically what 2020 is right now, where everyone was trying to get one-day tournaments in, there were so many of them that the Champions Trophy at that time seemed a bit odd. Because there were, you know, three-nation tournaments going on, four-nation tournaments going on all the time. But since those have died down, I think that has put it in a different league now, I think.
But it is similar in format, 50-over format, to the ICC's own World Cup, which is set every 4 years. Is there room, is there need for the Champions Trophy?
Well, I mean, the question is there need for anything apart from the World Cup then? And I think, you know, those of us who enjoy the 50-over format, I mean, like this tournament, the World Cup, I think, you know, needs to cast its net wide, and they seem to be going in the direction of having fewer teams, whereas I feel that a World Cup should actually have more teams. And, you know, cricket, you know, is played in all kinds of strange places in the world, and, you know, those people play with a lot of passion, and, you know, the World Cup is a good place to have, you know, the world represented. Champions Trophy, however, is for the best of the best. And the best teams, the best eight teams, they play. There's no room for even a Bangladesh or a Zimbabwe in this tournament.
So, Zub, is the Champions Trophy something you would like to see continue? Would you like to see the powers that be rethink this?
Yeah, instead of seeing the same teams kind of play over and over, let them play their domestic and let them play these little 2020 league stuff, which you just get to see the same guys, and then every so often have a big tournament like the Champions or the World Cup.
We talked off the top about some of the personalities we've seen in the Indian Premier League, and the chances are that they will be very much to the fore again. Of course, the obvious absentees from the IPL was Pakistan, because there are still no Pakistanis playing in IPL. How much of a surprise factor, if at all, will Pakistan be in the Champions Trophy, and how welcome a sight will Pakistan be, bearing in mind we don't see too much of them internationally?
Yeah, I think they're going to bring a lot to this tournament, and particularly in England, where they have a massive fan following. You know, their fans are going to be out in force in every game that they play. They bring their own passion and their color and their music and all of those things to those games. And that's going to add something to the atmosphere for sure. In terms of the actual players, as you said, I mean, a lot of the big guns have been playing against each other in the IPL, but they haven't been playing the Pakistanis. And, you know, that can be an advantage or a disadvantage for Pakistan.
How so?
There's an element of surprise that Pakistan can bring in. On the other hand, you know, players are familiar with each other, and that has its advantages. And the Pakistanis who haven't been through the grind of the IPL could either be rusty, you know, or they could be rested. So we'll have to see how that pans out. But I think usually with, you know, Pakistan have selected a strange side, but they haven't selected all of the usual suspects. They've brought in a couple of, you know, newer players. And one that intrigues me in particular is Mohammad Irfan, who's left arm, genuinely quick bowler, about 7 foot tall. And, you know, the South Africans saw him on the tour of South Africa. England saw him a couple of years ago when he didn't do that well. But other teams, I think, are going to be a bit surprised by Irfan. And I think he's probably going to turn into a bit of a cult figure.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited to see Pakistan, you know, and I like seeing them involved. They're exciting players. They're, you know, they've always a good lure in you know, Pakistani when they're playing together. They're fun to watch. But at the same time, they've got a pretty formidable attack. They've got a good bowling attack all around. They've got good pace. Mohammad Irfan is going to definitely be an X factor with his pace and his height. Hafiz is strong in the bowling. Ajmal. So they got a really good team. They got a fairly decent batting lineup now. It's kind of settled a little bit more. And, you know, I totally agree. They haven't played a lot, which is, I think, is to their benefit. They're kind of the underdog creeping in. So, yeah, I'm hoping they would get themselves back in because they kind of need that for their cricket.
Is there something of a, for want of a better expression, a bunker mentality about Pakistani international cricket because they haven't been allowed to enjoy the fruits and the riches of the IPL, and it gives the individuals extra momentum to turn up at a global event and say, don't forget about us, we're pretty good cricketers, and whether or not you want us in IPL, we'll show you how good we are?
They've always kind of had to get back in and to prove themselves all the time. They've look at the team on paper and you'd be going, holy geez, you know, Faraz and I talk about how good their bowling attack has been, players have been, you know, and you're wondering why haven't they done well or done better, you know, and it's just, I think everybody kind of wants them, you want to root for them. It's kind of like the West Indies of the old. You want them to get back to that winning, you know, you need them for international cricket. You can't just have, you want everybody to be strong. You want them to come back and have, you know, they've always had great bowlers and you want to see guys like that on the field. So I'm always rooting for them to get back. And then I think they have to prove, they're always trying to prove. And I think that, you know, this will be a nice tournament for them.
Yeah. And it's an interesting point you make, Nigel, about the fact that, you know, they're out of the IPL, but not only that, they don't play at home. And there are a number of young Pakistani players who are in their side who have never played a match at home. All of their cricket has been played abroad. And, you know, every time they go somewhere, they have to adapt to conditions. They never have home advantage, whether they're playing an ODI, a T20, or even a test match. And yet they, you know, they went out, they won, you know, a World T20 title a few years back. They swept a test series against England, which was the number one ranked side in the world. You know, so they have moments where they can turn it on. And I think Zub was saying, you do root for them a little bit because they have, you know, they make less money than their counterparts in other teams because they don't play in the IPL. And they never get to, you know, boost their stats at home by, you know, by home advantage.
All very interesting. Home advantage this time is with England and Wales, you might say, and a little bit of Ireland as well thrown in for good measure. It's all coming up on Sportsnet World and Sportsnet World Online, presented by CIBC. We'll break down the groups and give you our predictions when Cricket Central continues.
Sportsnet World and Sportsnet World Online are your destinations for the cricket spectacle of the year as 8 superpowers collide. Watch every match of the ICC Champions Trophy 2013 live in HD, June 6th to 23rd. Sportsnet World is available on TV, online, and mobile. Visit sportsnet.ca/world and subscribe today. Broadcast presented by CIBC.
Welcome back to Cricket Central. I'm Nigel Reid alongside Zubin Sakari and Faraz Sarawat. We're looking ahead to the 7th and possibly the last edition of the ICC Champions Trophy, gathering together the 8 top nations in the world in between the showers in England and Wales over the next couple of weeks. Gents, we've talked about the tournament from a big picture point of view. Let's get down to the finer details of the teams and the personalities we should look out for. Let me start with you, Zub. Australia is the defending champions and therefore one of the high seeds going into this tournament. They're obviously very experienced, very successful, and incredibly competitive at just about any form of this game. 50 overs aside clearly suits them. Are they favourites going into this tournament?
I don't think they're going to be favourites, but they're definitely not pushovers. And in a tournament like this where you get a bit of momentum and, you know, it's kind of a knockout, basically a knockout, you never know what the outcome can be. And you get on a bit of a roll, guys are a bit hot. Guys like, when you have a guy like Shane Watson in the side who could potentially smash 150. You know, Australia is always a formidable side. They've never. I don't think they've ever had a weak side. They were obviously not as strong as they have been. They obviously have a young team, a slightly young team. I think they were talking a bit weak on the bowling side, in experience and actual pace, or swing in England, which is probably what you need. I don't see them not making it to the final four, but I don't think they're going to win it. I think there's some teams there that don't look at them the same way, that come out and fight a bit more against them. Spin, I think, is a bit of a problem for them too. They don't have many guys that can play spin really well.
From a cricketing perspective, for us, they tend to intimidate opponents just because they're Australia and they've been so successful, so combative for so long. But you actually look at that 15 and you pick out a few names. Certainly Shane Watson is a match winner with both bat and ball on his day. But are we looking at a slightly, by Australian standards, a team that is not quite the sum of its parts?
Yes. Exactly. You know, you look at that side and you start to pick out of those 15, well, who would I have in my 11? And you end up with six names, you know, and you look at the rest and they all seem kind of like filler. So, you know, the players that are good are good and they can, you know, propel Australia through this tournament. But they would all have to be firing most of the time. And, you know, Zub identified Shane Watson. Yes, it may, you know, rise and fall with Shane Watson. I mean, if he has a good day, he's virtually unstoppable. You know, he hits a brace of sixes when he's batting, you know, a confidence cricketer and type of cricketer that if he gets going, his form generally continues. It's not like he has one good game and then, you know, three or four bad ones. It's usually the other way around. If he has a good game, he'll have a second good game and a third good game. And then maybe towards the end, maybe an odd bad one. And this is a short tournament. So if Shane Watson is firing, Australia will do well. The bowling, as Zub said, and not quite what it used to be. But then what are we comparing it to? Are we comparing it to a side that used to have Glenn McGrath and Shane Warne in it? Well, obviously, it's not going to measure up to that. But it'll be interesting to see. And some of these Australian players have played a bit of county cricket, league cricket in England, so they are familiar with conditions. And as you said, you know, they come out to play with some swagger and some self-belief. And, you know, that is also worth something.
Let's talk about India. At this format, the 50-over format, they are the world champions. There's no question about that, because they are the current World Cup holders at the 50-over format. And I'm just thinking back to what we've been talking about in recent weeks, and of course the proliferation of IPL, and I think of Dhoni, and I think of Kohli, and I think of Raina, and a number of other players that I enjoyed watching over the last 7 or 8 weeks in the T20 format. But I guess, Zub, you could probably name me just as many, if not more, fabled Indian players who have excelled at all sorts of formats of the game who actually aren't on this squad. So I guess my point here is somewhat similar to the Australian question. Has India got the 15 best players, you know, on that roster?
Not only the best, but the most in form. I like that they picked Dinesh Kartik. He was going well in the domestic stuff. He looks good. I mean, he's got 100 in the warm-up game, chasing a pretty good total. Kohli is amazing, and I think he's going to do really well in the tournament. So that's X Factor guy right there. They got a bit of swagger about them. Their fielding is pretty strong these days. They got the best finisher in Dhoni. And I think maybe the only thing that creeps in is that it might be a bit too much cricket in the last little while. They've played a lot of IPL, and they could just be kind of fatigued. But a lot of countries are kind of going through that too, you know. But they probably, obviously, all their players are playing IPL.
Yeah, I mean, I think this, when I look at this Indian side, it seems in some sense traditional, that if you go back 10 years, maybe tactic for India was that you load the side with batsmen. And, you know, they're so good that anything you set for them, they'll be able to chase it down, or they'll set a target that is unachievable for another team. And I think that's going to kind of be the tactic here, because if you actually look at the Indian bowling attack, the spinners are good. But the pacemen, not so much. And, you know, even the warm-up game they played against Sri Lanka, they conceded a lot of runs, 330-odd runs, but they were able to chase it down. No problem if you've got a Virat Kohli who's, you know, a magnificent player. So I think that's going to be the tactics. It'll be interesting to see, and it'll be an enjoyable game when an Indian batting lineup comes up against a good bowling attack.
Okay, so those are, one would perhaps predict on paper, the strongest sides in the two pools. In Group A, it's Australia. In Group B, it is India. Bearing in mind, you've got two pools of four. Everybody plays everybody else in their group, and then the top two from each team qualifies for the semi-finals, and then they cross over A versus A1 versus B2, and so on. So we've discussed Australia in India, and I think everybody would be pretty surprised if neither of those two reached the final four. Let's just stay on the Indian theme for a moment, and a little reference back to what we were talking about earlier on. I guess it's no surprise, and I'm sure they would like to tell you that it was an open draw, but it's no surprise to see India and Pakistan in Group B, and that'll be a much anticipated fixture, of course.
Oh yeah, and India playing Pakistan anywhere is a fun fixture, in England particularly so, where you'll have fans from both sides there in their numbers. It's going to be, pretty action-packed game, one would think. Both sides will, you know, play their best. And just as we were saying, a good batting attack against a good bowling attack, well, you're not going to get it much better than an India-Pakistan game where, you know, the Indian batting is wonderful and the Pakistanis have some interesting bowlers. So that'll be a good game.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, you say you've got one team stacked in batting, another team that is traditionally strong, particularly in the fast bowling department. We were talking off-air before the start of the show, and you were sort of saying, well, you know, in this sort of round-robin format, you probably can't afford to lose more than one game, if that at all. Well, when India and Pakistan come up against each other, there is obviously going to be a winner and a loser.
Some might argue that might be the champions for them. You know, they rather win that game than actually win the tournament, perhaps. Yeah, and you know what else is probably going to be interesting is how guys go about the run rate. I'm not sure how that's going to work, because in a tournament like this, there's going to be two teams not winning one and two, and there could be, you know, there's going to come down to run rate. So it's going to be interesting how guys chase and stuff like that. But coming back to India-Pakistan, I think for years it's always been Pakistani bowling versus India batting, and it's always kind of been that lead-up, and I think this is going to be an awesome game.
Let's talk about home advantage, gentlemen. England, the hosts of this, they know about the conditions, they know about running away from the showers when they happen. They know about cups of tea and sandwiches with the crusts cut off and so on and so forth. I mean, that I jest, of course. But, I mean, England should be there or thereabouts, purely because they're the hosts. Wherever they play, they will have good support. But are they actually a strong enough outfit without the likes of Kevin Peterson to be a relevant factor in this competition?
I think they can be, although they're getting spanked by, or got spanked by, New Zealand. You wouldn't expect
that. Doesn't bode well.
No, it doesn't bode well. Doesn't bode well, particularly, you know, as you say, the home advantage and all the rest of it. And you know, England have had a very good run of form lately, but it's not consistent. I mean, never carries through from Test to ODIs. If they're doing well in the ODIs, the Tests don't work out so well, and if the Tests have gone well, the ODIs don't work out so well. But I like the look of the England team. I think the batting is pretty strong. You know, Owen Morgan to me is, you know, a unique player that England are very fortunate to have, and you know, coming down, you know, in the lower order makes a big difference to them in terms of chasing or setting, and he's unique in how he maneuvers the ball around. And you have a proper opening batsman in Alistair Cook at the top, and, you know, can deal with a moving ball. And, you know, so I think that England have the ingredients there to do well. And it's sometimes a mystery why they don't perform better, even at home.
Talk about the bowling side of this now. You're looking at Jimmy Anderson, you're looking at Stuart Broad. Apparently there are one or two doubts about his fitness, but I would imagine he will play a part at some stage in the competition. After those two, are England a little short in the bowling department, or can they, over the course of a 50-over game, everybody gets 10 overs, be a well-balanced team?
I think it's a major factor for them, but, I mean, if anything, England's probably got the best bowling attack in the coffers, you know, so they got guys coming through that are good. So I don't think they're too bad. I don't think the conditions are going to play too much of a factor, as opposed to when they're playing Test cricket with the red ball and how much it swings. I think they'll do well if they have Jimmy Anderson and Finn and things like that, bowling, and Broad, if he's fit. They'll do okay. They've got two guys, Cook and Trott, who play when it's tough can play a, you know, kind of a back role and then make up for it later with guys like Morgan coming in.
Well, you talk about New Zealand, and they are in the same group as England, so we'll see whether or not that plays out when the tournament proper begins. But I was also having a glance through the rosters a little earlier, and you look at Sri Lanka's, and there are some, shall we say, seasoned veterans on that team, but some still very effective batsmen, and Lasith Malinga, very experienced bowler, and they've basically endured they're no pup these players, but they're very experienced, and Sri Lanka on its day can beat anybody at this format.
Yeah, absolutely, they can. And you know, they Sri Lanka has a good record and ICC events. They generally make it to the final, and then that's it. That's as far as it goes, really. So that's kind of interesting.
But it's going to make it tough. You look at that group, and you know, Australia, you would think a shoo-in for the semi-finals, and then it's any one from three: England, the host, New Zealand, and Sri Lanka. As we say, are mm-hmm. a very decent one-day team.
Yeah, and that's, you know, what makes this tournament a really good tournament is that. There are no throwaway games. Each game is very important, and you can make a case for any of those four teams being, you know, in the final four, especially after New Zealand have just spanked England. So you've got a New Zealand.
Thanks for reminding us again, by the way.
So you've got New Zealand in good form. You've got an England side that has home advantage. You've got a Sri Lanka, as you say, chock full of experienced players and quality players.
Yeah.
And you have Australia, which is, you know, a perennial. So. You know, it's a strong pool, and I would argue that the other pool may even be stronger.
Well, let's have a look at that. Group B, we've mentioned the India and Pakistan rivalry. That speaks for itself. And that's not even mentioning South Africa and AB de Villiers. And here we are this far into the show, and we haven't even mentioned the West Indies and possibly the best one-day player on the planet, certainly the best T20 player on the planet, in Chris Gayle. And the fact that the West Indies are the T20 world champions, that doesn't necessarily mean they'll be the best 50-over side. But I'm willing to bet if you've got Bravo and you've got Gayle and you've got one or two others in your team, you've got a pretty strong outfit, haven't you?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how West Indies approaches this tournament. And it's obviously different from the 2020 sure. format. It's a bit tougher, I think, in terms of their style of cricket. Gayle, I think, will do okay. I mean, he's done well in England and has played well in Champions Trophies before. But I think they're going to lack a little bit in the actual just constructing a full innings and putting up a big total. Maybe they can get a good 220, but it's the
Gayle could get 220 yeah. himself.
There you go. What's good about their team now? It's kind of settled a little bit. They've had the same amount of guys. Their fast bowlers are getting better at. They're getting a bit more mature. They're a good outfit. They want to win. They want to get back to winning. And it's going to be interesting. I mean, and then. You know, obviously South Africa is the perennial favorites. I think out of the top two, you know, they got the all around probably the best team batting wise to some extent, and you know, just fielding and bowling, obviously with Dale staying there. Mm. But I think this is going to be an important tournament, and you know, you've heard kind of de Villiers talk about, you know, this is the one, this is the tournament that they need, and if they don't win this, I think it'll kind of creep into their mind that they're not winning in the big tournament.
Interestingly as well, of course, I noticed that a number of the South Africans are saying, you know, this is the last tournament for Gary Kirsten before he hands over the reins, and we want to, you know, finish with a flourish for him.
Yeah, that's a nice sentiment, isn't it?
Well, it is, yeah. Whether or not it actually adds any weight to their performance, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten beyond parody now when we talk about how South Africa don't do well in ICC tournaments, but this is the one. This is the one where the captain comes out and says, this is the one where we're going to do well. No, I don't think so. History is against them. History is against them. Even though, as Zoop said, very strong side, but they've had stronger teams in different tournaments, and it hasn't quite worked out. A tournament like this, if they actually, you know, get through the group stage, then yes, they have a shot, of course. But it's going to be tough for them to get through the group stage, even though they've got brilliant, brilliant players like AB de Villiers in their side and Dale Steyn.
Simple as that. And it's amazing that we're sitting here talking about players of that caliber, and they probably on paper go into this tournament as fourth favourites in their group of four, Zoob.
Look, if they don't make the final and if not win it, I think it's a kind of a disappointment. I think they have Dale Steyn and how much of an impact he can. Now he's bowling 10 overs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He can easily sever the top half of the innings, you know, against the batting lineup. So, and AB is awesome. I think David Miller His IPL campaign was strong, and I think it's developed him as a cricketer. Now people look at him going, this guy's a match changer, and he played some mature innings, and that'll translate. And even though it is international, there's still that, you know, he's still got that edge. People know.
Yeah, one thing I think will be kind of interesting to see is, and it's going to depend on what the conditions are like, but if the spinners get purchase out of the wickets, how is a South African side going to fare against India or Pakistan, right? If you've got Ajmal and Hafiz and Jadeja and Ashwin bowling at you, how do you negotiate that? And if they can actually do well against the spin, then yes, they'll do well in the tournament.
Yeah, I agree. It's how much of an impact the spin is going to have, or vice versa, how much of an impact the pitches might have for the Pacers. If the wickets start coming through and they start swinging and bouncing, I think you're going to see the South Africa's and Australia's and the English team with the tall guys coming through and bowling well. But if there is a bit of turn and they can negotiate that, it's definitely towards India and Pakistan's favor.
That's always assume it ever stops raining. And we get some 50-over games in the ICC Champions League 50-over contest. Fascinating conversation, and I'm not going to put you on the spot because, as you've said, there are 8 good teams. There are no, you know, half-baked teams here, and all have reason and all have talent for success. Australia, England, New Zealand, Sri Lanka in Group A, India, Pakistan, South Africa, and the Windies in Group B. Australia, the defending champions, England with home advantage. We'll see what we see over the next couple of weeks as we look ahead to the ICC Champions Trophy 2013 on Sportsnet World and Sportsnet World Online, presented by CIBC. Subin Fraz, good of you to take the time to join us on Cricket Central as usual. I'm Nigel Reid. Once again, thanks for listening. Cricket Central is a Titan GSG production. Executive producer is Rathan Morthy, and the editor is Jeff Eaton.